Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today I'm here with Nyx. Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Well, tired, exhausted, you know, adulting.
Normal for adults, yep.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about our voices and also failing in the tabletop role-playing space, whether in games or in general. All this stuff we're going to touch on, everything, because ADHD brain either way. But before we get started, even though I'm sure everybody already knows, please introduce yourself and where you are from.
Hi, I'm Nyx. I'm your proud punk rock uncle, and you're doing an amazing job. I will never be able to unstreamer myself ever again. I'm a glass at your silly internet person. I stream. I'm all over the place. I am an incorrigible encourager, as I like to call myself.
Mm-hmm. Gotta make sure everybody is doing the thing that they want to do.
I'm really bad with the people have just the slightest whimsy of an idea. I'm very much like, yes.
Yeah, whenever friends have like, I have an idea for a podcast, I'm like, don't come to me for it because you're going to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, I have too many ideas. I am the wrong person to come to. I will encourage the shit out of that. Let's go. And I also want to be in it.
Well, it's like you tell me about something cool. Now I want it. Now you have to do it.
Exactly. It's like, I get so caught up on ideas sometimes. I'm like, okay, how can we make this work? And I just immediately put myself into the project. I'm like, how can we do this? That sounds cool as fuck. Let's do that.
There are a number of people in the TTRPG space that have gotten the email from me of like, look, okay, I know this is weird, but I had an idea in the middle of the night and I think it's yours. I think I accidentally got it. Like, it's such a cool idea, but it's not up my alley and I don't think I could ever do it. I think it's meant for you. This. And they're just like, okay, that sounds cool. Now I have to make it. Thanks. I'm like, cool. The universe got their wires crossed. That wasn't meant to come to me. That was for you. Please make it so I can buy one.
Make it so I can consume this, please. Honestly, that's a mood sometimes. I just wish that there's like so many things that I want to create, but I'm also like, but I don't want to do it. Like, I have so much on my plate already. Mm-hmm. Can somebody else make this thing that I really want to have?
Yeah.
No, like, I'll play in it.
I don't have time, or that's not my forte. You know, that's not the medium I work in. And I don't have the time, energy, patience, or money to learn a whole new thing for this random idea that popped into my head. Who do I know that already does this? Them. Okay, I'm going to go tell them about it.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I've done that a couple of times where I got ideas that are more up somebody else's alley. Like, I can't DM horror games, but I love playing in horror games. So if I think of a cool horror idea, I'm like, hey, person who likes to run horror games and does a very good job at it, would you like to do this thing, please? Mm-hmm. I want to play in it. Break my character, please.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of the topic at hand, I guess, how do I transition things?
The ADHD way. We just say them and go.
That's fair. Voices. I think that in tabletop games, and I don't know if this is the route you wanted to go with this, but when I think of voices in TTRPGs, I think of having a bunch of different types of voices mixed in and telling a story that wouldn't have been told if it was just from one person's perspective. So there's been so many stories that I've been involved in that just got so much better because of other people that are involved in them. And like the idea was like simplistic and like one thing, and then it turned into this beast of a creature at the end of it, and we're just like, oh my god, I love this. How did we get here though?
I'm very much for like diversity of voices at a table, you know, like I don't want to show up to a group. Like the first time I played D&D, it was a group of people who looked exactly like me, and it went very badly, like very, okay, very, very grossly, misogynistically, racistly, homophobically badly. And so, that's like, okay, if I walk into a group and I'm like, that there's one gender representation here and there's a distinct lack of melanin, like, I'm going to have to pass. You should give my spot to somebody who doesn't look like the rest of you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing that with a lot of the games that I've been running or playing in, because, like, I produce, or I'm the project director for Weave the Tale right now, and I also produce shows for Chaotic Wonderful. So whenever we do those, we always make sure everybody is included. And so we ensured that, like, we asked about what race are you? Like, what do you have disabilities? Do you have neurodivergencies and stuff like that? So we try to make sure somebody of each type is involved if we can. It's been interesting to learn as we go what to look out for. And sometimes, like, you can't plan for everything, but you can at least try. And the stories that have different people, I've noticed, are much better and much more fun than the stories that were just all white people. I haven't played in anything that's all one gender specifically since I've been podcasting, but that's because, or at least like it's one male to four female type of vibe. But that's because I am female and I want females or non-binary people at my tables. So I'm like, come join. Come play with me.
Well, it's like with stuff like that, I can really tell from the get-go, because I haven't run anything yet, as much as everyone keeps poking me. When they ask you to join, you know, and they give you like a questionnaire to, like, first off, if they give you kind of a questionnaire to fill out, that's a good indicator, you know. And then if you've got like they want to know your gender representation, this, that's a great, like, if somebody says yeah, just come join, I don't know, I'm a little squiffy.
Yeah, that makes sense. I always appreciate when I get those surveys. Like, they're annoying to fill out sometimes, but it's like, I'd rather fill this out and make sure you know who I am completely and know who everybody is at the table. Because also how they answer sometimes can also be a very deterring factor. So I've declined people who've applied to games because of what they responded to the, is there anything about yourself that would be considered diverse question. And sometimes people are just like sarcastic as fuck in it. And I'm like, I don't want you at my table.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's a rude sarcastic too. It's not even a funny sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, you're not at my table. Like, I will play with a straight white guy. That's fine. Not you, though.
Yeah. Well, it's like we appreciate a good self-deprecation on a questionnaire. But like there are specific levels of sarcasm that you're just like, I feel like you're going to sour the experience for the other people around the table.
Yeah, 100%. So for you, what does like voices, what else would voices mean?
A lot of it is for me is finding your own voice and your mm-hmm. being comfortable with you, your ability to participate in a story.
That's fair, yeah.
Step into a role and feel comfortable, you know, expressing small aspects of yourself and your voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a little more timid of a person, finding that inner strength through another character, the ability to be assertive when need be, you know, to be able to practice that and just kind of work through it in a safe environment and find, be able to at the end of it go, okay, I want to incorporate a little bit of this character back into me because it obviously lives there. I'm yeah. able to produce it.
So I've done that before, and I've mentioned this story before, so apologies if I'm repeating myself for those who are listening. I don't care. I'm very quiet. I'm an introverted person. I was always very introverted. And when I started playing tabletop games more, I was pushed into a more charismatic role for the first time. Usually I just played fighters or like background characters, support class characters. And I was like, okay, sure. Like I could do charisma, sure, whatever. Like it's fine. It's a character. It's fine. And I was put into a position where I had to make a choice. And I was literally told by a really good friend who I knew would actually do this, was like, if you decide to just walk away and not make a choice, you're not coming back to the table. Because I didn't want to make a choice because I was too scared of the consequences. And this is a friend who knows me very well. So I was like, damn it. Like, why would you make me do this? How dare you? But I did it because I wanted to continue to play and I liked the game. And that taught me slowly how to be more charismatic, how to be more talkative, how to be more myself ultimately, which happened more over the last year or so. But now, like without that prior talk 4+ years ago, I wouldn't have ever thought of being on a podcast and being like a host or anything like that, because I was like, why would I put myself out in front of people? That sounds crazy. Like, that's absurd. And now I'm very extroverted online. Still kind of introverted in large groups in person. So mm-hmm. conventions are like very draining, but also very fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for PAX U. Gonna be hooking up my claws into some of my friends, though. Be like, you're my person right now.
Emotional support convention person.
Yep, just switch up who I am dealing with each time. Be like, you're my emotional support person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was taught because I got to play through characters and have that outlet and learn through a situation that had consequences, but not like real life consequences. so I could do stupid things and be like, oh yeah, that didn't work. Let's not do that in real life.
Right.
Maybe let's not do that one.
One of the fun things for me has always been the fact that, like, I don't know, I've heard some people say it's an ADHD thing. Finding voices, your voice, as far as like being a character.
Mm-hmm.
I just straight up do voices when I'm alone in my house. I am currently stuck in Belter mode because I just got doing an Expanse TTRPG over on Greater Restoration. So I've been referring to my cat as Bratna a lot. I don't know why, but when I'm like, I just do, when I'm thinking to myself, act by myself, I just like inhabit voices. And when I do the voice, I act away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to be able to like channel that into something where there are other people involved. I guess that's acting. I guess that's what that is. You just like, you go from being a closeted weirdo to an onstage weirdo.
Thunder, yeah.
So that, it's been an interesting thing for me. Cause like most of the day, I just sit and talk like this, you know, and I just hang out with my cat and I'm like, oh fuck. Like, well, I'm gonna have to mop that later. And I just, for no reason, it's really bad because I pick up people's accents super bad and super fast.
Yeah.
Like in person, if I'm talking to someone and they have a definitive accent, and it's hard sometimes because sometimes it's a speech impediment and I have to literally stop and tell people, I am going to pick this up. I am not shitting on you. I am not mocking you in any way. I will do my best not to, but the more time I spend around you, the more my brain's going to try and mimic you.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to just like inhabit those people's voices a little bit. And then be able to use them in other places in other ways.
Yeah, like in characters later and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of like letting the voices embolden you,
mm-hmm.
because it's not you per se.
Yeah, I don't do accents well. Like I can do a Southern accent pretty well, or mm-hmm. like a Midwestern, that's not the right word, or a Wild West one was like the only one I ever could really do. But I do tonality changes with my characters a lot. So if my character is a very anxious, excitable character, their tone will change. And instead of talking like I talk, they'd be like, oh my God, that's so exciting. Oh my God, how do you think that works? Do you think that works really well? Do you think I'm doing okay? They just are going to talk faster and more excitable, more like sporadic sentences. And I just pull in my inner self when I start talking about things I'm very excited about and just put that all out. Like that's me 24/7 with this character. And then some characters are just super chill and are high all the time, so they just have a very slow and like calmer tonality. It's like, eh, so that's cool. Like, I guess if we want to do that, sure. And it's fun. My favorite is the seductress one though, because once I mastered that one, I was like, yes. Mm-hmm. Do this in real life? No. In character though.
That one, you have to be careful. I've found that there are repercussions to doing the seductive voice in real life. Like,
yeah. I can't do it in real life. In real life, I get awkward. In games, I'm like, oh, I'm good at this. What are you talking about?
That's what's funny, too, is because, like, if I'm trying to be seductive, I feel awkward as shit. But if I'm just being goofy that happens to be in a seductive modality,
mm-hmm.
I can do it. As long as I'm not like, yes, as long as my brain doesn't go, you're being attractive right now, I'll giggle at myself all day long. But as long as I'm just kind of doing a bit because I know the other person is into it and enjoys it and likes it, I can do the bit.
Yeah. I was told as a DM that I played seductive goddesses very well, and I was like, thank you.
Nice.
I was like, I'll take that as a compliment. Like, that's nice. Cool. Awesome. And then I dated one of them and I'm like, yeah, that's not me. No, I get flustered and confused. Like I don't know how to do that. And I'm also oblivious to anybody telling me that they like me. Like I'm just like, I'm sorry, what now? You do what now? How long? For why? Like I don't understand.
I do love having the discussion with people that like want to do voices or accents or anything like that, but like they're scared, because that's a lot you hear a lot in the DTRPG spaces. I don't do accents because my accent is terrible. Mm-hmm. And just trying, like, I'm just constantly reminding people, like, it's a fantasy made up universe. It's like, yes, you can't do a perfect Irish accent. There's no Ireland on the Swords Coast. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's like, it does, you sound like a person from Waterdeep. It's perfect the way it is.
Right.
It's bloody made up. So just like, if find somewhere where your voice rests naturally and you don't have to struggle with it, and good enough, just go with it.
I have a hard time keeping it up. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I'll just instantaneously switch back to my normal voice. So then I'm like, wait, how does that voice go again? How did words happen? What is happening? I know if I practice though, it'll get better. I just don't have any want to, but I admire the DMs that and players who can do multiple accents, because it does make a story sound so much better when you have a different persona for each person. But you can do that with tonality too. So that
tonality, you know, at the table or digitally at the table, like physicality will change. You know, you can have the physical voice of your character be mm-hmm. completely different, and like even if it's the same ish voice, like the players are, you know, can see that shift in physicality. Yeah. And they're like, okay, this registers as a different voice, this is a different person, you know. And so it's like, if you can combine like a bunch of, you know, tonality, accent, you know, physicality, that's when you get into like the masterclass of finding a building a character.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's like, you can do any, all, or none, and it's still just as good, and you can still have a heck of a time.
Yeah, 100%. And if you're like new to the game and you don't have any options, like you just like, I just want to be myself. I'm like, do it. Have fun. Mm-hmm. My only advice is don't put all your trauma into one character. Learn from other people's mistakes. Nothing to do with voices. Just trust me. But that actually kind of goes into failing. It's okay to fail in your mm-hmm. games, in character and out of character.
Mm-hmm.
In character, failure or like flaws, I think, make characters who they are. And I absolutely adore the stories that come out of characters who are flawed. I have quite a few angry ladies that I play. And one of them was like super jealous. And whenever her crush got flirted with around her, like she was a demon, and like lights would start to flicker around them. Because she would like, she'd roll a keep it cool kind of mode, because the monster of the week. And then she wouldn't keep it cool. And she just like lights would just start flickering and nobody would know what was happening. And it always made it more interesting. And there was like one scene where the character had a dark master of sorts in the game, and they were called the salesman, and they were a dick. And she was purposely going against him, and he figured it out that she was going against him. So he was like, well, fine, you want to fight me, then I'll make you pay for that. And when her crush came in, he gave her all, I had to roll a keep it together, or a, what is it called? I don't remember, but I had to roll a cool check. And I got a mixed success. So the DM said, do you want to run away when your crush comes in? Or do you want all of the emotions of a teenager who just got their first crush? And I said, well, that one sounds way more entertaining, so let's do that. And suddenly, like, she had butterflies in her stomach, her hands were sweating, she had, her heart was racing, even though she didn't have a heart. Like, all of the nine yards was going on, and she just was, like, a stuttering, flustered mess and turned bright red. And the other character runs up and is like, are you okay? And puts her hand on her. And the DM just goes, Nikki, she's touching you. And it just got way worse. But it was way more entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if she just ran away, none of that would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just funny as hell. She's like, you're pretty, I gotta go. We could go on a date later, bye. Just like darts out of the room when normally she's all cool, calm, and collected.
It's like character, both failures and failings, whether it's like a whimsical failing. I played a satyr for a while that was just like your consummate himbo of a just like, I just want the shiny things, man. Just like, I really like shiny things. They add so much fun flavor. Cause like, yes, everybody wants to be the stalwart hero, you know, upholding truth or justice, or like the raging anti-hero who's got an axe to grind. But it's like, it's these tiny little flavor failings, whether they're like, it's a good failing or a bad, like, I feel like failing might be the wrong word, you know, just that, like, I can't help but stop and pet kittens. I am compulsed. Or also, you know, I have an insatiable, you know, need for shiny things, you know, and I will sign any contract with any patron to get it.
That is definitely a fun one, too. I think it's always interesting to kind of play on the tropes, but also fun to play on other sides of things. So like a new game I'm in with a masks game, I made a character called Showstopper, and she's a star. She wants to be the center of attention. That's a huge problem in a team game.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned just how big of a problem it was in our first session last night at the time of recording this, when I lost our only team point because my character's like, no, I'm in charge, not you, everybody else. Everybody's like, no, we think this person's in charge. And my character's like, oh, no, 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 I'm in charge. I'm going to take control of this. It didn't end well. The whole thing went terribly wrong. But she was just so full of herself that she's like, no, I got this. What are you talking about? Like, pay attention to me. Come on. There's going to be some character growth with her, and it's going to be interesting.
Well, that's what I love, too, is like, it's not just the potential for like that character's growth, but the growth of every character around them.
Mm-hmm.
As they make failures, it gives those other characters a chance to kind of shine,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then that the character that had the failure to like learn and grow and also shine. You know, so it's one of those fun things of like, it's a nice balance to try and play like the shit-hitty character, but not to the nth degree. So you've got that, you can work well-ish with the other characters. Still be a little bit of conflict. So everybody has a chance for failure and growth without getting to be where like the paladin keeps preventing the rogue from roguing at all times in all places.
I've had a game like that. That was so terrible.
Like, I understand, like, if there's a cute little buddy cop thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you get to those moments where, like, one character is preventing another character from being the character for no reason other than, like, this is what my character would do. Well, like, your character should be riddled with arrows. They're an ass.
I remember a game where a player saw my character. They weren't even paying attention to my character. My character found a chest and was a rogue. And I forget exactly the details, but they really liked birds for some reason. Either they were a bird or they were worshiping the Raven Queen. I don't remember the specifics. But I found a raven dagger inside of this chest that was magical. So my character pocketed it because she's like, this is really cool. It's shiny. It has bird motif. I love it. I want it. I'm used daggers. Why not? And nobody was around, but the person suddenly was like, oh, what'd you find there? And I'm like, you didn't see anything. Metagame much. But like their entire thing was like focused on, I don't trust you, even though I convinced them I didn't do anything and I succeeded. And they're like, I don't trust you. I'm like, but why?
Mm-hmm.
What have I done to you? I have been nothing but kind and generous. And I gave you all of this gold. There was nothing else in there. And they were a paladin, I believe, or like a lawful good character of some sort. And they were very much against whatever the rogue wanted to do. And I'm like, can you just let me steal things sometimes, please? Like, I'm not stealing from you.
Like, you don't have to be a cop all the time.
And if I did steal from you, I give it back.
Eventually.
I'd just be like, haha, I did it. Get better. Get good. Here's your dagger. Mm-hmm. Here's your thing back. It's always fascinating to see failures in connections and how people play that out.
Mm-hmm.
So like sibling rivalry, or I love romance in games. So romances are like when things start to get questionable in a romance sometimes, because you're like, wait, they're reading this completely differently than you're reading it. I like to talk a lot of that out because if it involves two people, I would rather like discuss out a character first, just to get a general concept of like, hey, are you cool with XYZ before we jump in? Because consent is important. But then I don't think it changes the story at all once you get into the story, because it's still going to be surprising however you get to that point and then how you fix it ultimately. It's like, how can we fix this in character that makes sense?
Yeah, a lot of the best moments in my games, personally, for my characters have all been failure moments. you know, because they've either led to someone else getting the spotlight, or they've led to a hilarious moment. Because, you know, who doesn't like a death that's been foreshadowed? I did one game the entire time. He was a grizzled old, like, army, you know, towns guard sergeant that was like, don't volunteer for anything. Ever. Ever. And then at the end, he volunteered and, you know, like, didn't survive. I told you so! And that was it. Like, you know.
Learn from my words, not what I do.
Yeah. And just those fun moments of just, like, you know, the recovery from the failure is always fun, too. It kind of, like, you know, you're in, whether it's social moments or combat moments, when you're like, well, your turn's done and none of that worked. Oh, shit. Okay, calculate mode. Calculate mode. What's the next person going to do? Can I interface with what they're about to do socially or combat wise, or can I bolster it? Can I play off of it? You know, it. I love that panic scramble of like, that didn't work. I thought it was going to work. I was convinced it was going to work. I had a whole speech planned out for when it finally worked, and it didn't work.
That was supposed to work.
So recalculating with a quickness.
Yeah, that's always interesting, like when you discuss something and you're planning it to go one way and you're like, okay, I'm just asking a simple question. That's all I want is one simple question. How did we end up here? Like 10 minutes later, everything's on fire. You're just like, I asked a question. What the fuck happened? And you like look back and you're like, oh, that's what, how did we get here though? Like you failed a dice roll. It's like, oh, and then somebody also failed a dice roll.
Yeah, yeah. Just like one simple wisdom check. That went badly, and just like the entirety of the campaign took a left turn.
One choice, one action, one sentence, the wrong sentence to the right person.
Mm-hmm. And that's how we kicked off the 20 years war. All I said was this piece of halibut was good enough for Jehovah.
I remember there was a game we were supposed to, I think it was Descendant Avernus or Avernus, but we got distracted very early on because my character's sister, who was played by Ellen Delina, she decided that this woman who was caged in a cart that was going away, she had to rescue the person, even though when we stopped the person and talked to them, we discovered it was a Medusa. And that should have been a sign enough that we should not rescue this Medusa lady. That's probably a bad idea. But she decided that we should rescue this person. And as soon as she freed her, got turned into stone. And we spent the next like 8 weeks in out of game or 8 weeks of sessions like trying to solve that problem before we could even go to the plan originally. Like we had a mission and everything, and that was not the mission.
I love too for GMs and DMs, it must be just like, I'm, you know, I hope I have enough content, you know, for this. And then like you know, third encounter with the players and they start making their decisions, you're like, oh no, we'll be fine.
Well, but we're great. I planned for like what I thought would be 8 weeks, and it's actually like with this group, we're not going down that route out anyway. That's all. Just push that aside. Improv the rest of this.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Sorry for the interruption here, but I wanted to give you an advertisement for one of our friends in the tabletop community. Please give it a listen and go check them out. The moment has come. You're the DM of a brand new story and you planned for everything. Or did you?
What's the name of this dwarf bartender?
Your mind is reeling. You can't think of anything. All the ideas you've come up with are already used or so unoriginal. Frank the Dwarf? Jerry? Bartender? Gah!
Actually, we're bored. Let's go next door and see what they have to offer.
Oh no, you didn't plan for them going next door to a building you didn't even describe. What are you going to do? What type of building is it? What type of store? Who is the owner? Oh no! Never fear, Dwarf Dice is here. Use other creators' tables to come up with names and descriptions on the fly, or create your own to fit your setting and style. With ease, you can quickly find those answers to those pesky questions that derail the DMing flow. Go to DurfDice.com today for a free account and save yourself some time from prepping buildings they usually wouldn't go into. And now, back to the show. So, since both of us are freelancers and do stuff in the tabletop community space, we can also talk about not just failing in characters, but also the types of things that you learn from by being in those types of spaces as an actual person. Because there is a lot of stepping stones, all of which start with a slight fuck up or failure of some sort. And you learn as you grow. But yeah, have you learned anything specifically that you could think of from failing in the tabletop space?
A lot. I mean, coming into this space for the longest time was a exercise in failure from the moment that I walked in as a maker. Mm-hmm. Because I hadn't really been around the community a lot. And I immediately came in with like, hey, I make stuff for sale. And nobody knew who I was.
Right.
You know, so it's like you don't make any headway. You don't just kick in the door somewhere and just be like, hey, buy my stuff.
I wish that would be that easy.
Right. And it's very disheartening to, you know, you put your stuff out there, you care about it, but, you know, you don't get any interaction. You don't get any engagement and anything. And I really had to take a step back and be like, okay, I'm trying to be Walmart and this isn't a space for that. This is a space for independent people who make things and they care about the things that they make. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a community. And so I really just started interacting, stopped trying to sell things completely, you know, and I just started participating. Mm-hmm. And then whenever the topic came up about makery stuff, or somebody was like, you know, does anybody do cool stuff, or, you know, here's the thing I'm doing, then I would bring it up. I'd be like, oh yeah, by the way, I do this. But it's just like walking, I literally like walked through the door, tripped on the threshold, face plant. Okay, bad introduction, let's try this again.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of established myself as an actual human person first.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, and then I just built from there.
Yeah, I had a similar experience with the podcast. So as of December 30th, the podcast will be 3 years old. And when I first started it, it was because I was like, maybe I should do a podcast because my husband's tired of listening to me talk about D&D and I want to talk about D&D to somebody. But when I went into it, it was just me floundering, trying to figure out what I wanted. And I didn't like put much thought into it because ADHD brain and hyperfocus and needed to get it done now before I lost that energy is what my mindset has always been. And the first 3-4 months weren't great. Like I put episodes out and they were okay, but I was like, there's such a learning curve happening. And ultimately, after like a month, I finally got a co-host thinking like, okay, maybe if I got a co-host, this will make it easier. And I just got so excited the first time someone's like, I'm interested. I didn't vet them very well. And it just, we clashed so badly personality-wise. Mm. And ultimately, I quit for like 2 months. And when I came back with a friend. And I came back with a different mindset because I was like, I want to do this because I'm enjoying it. And I just want to be me instead of being like this PC version of me that I've been trying to put on a persona for and talk about the things I love to talk about. And I also started to do Twitter and talk to other people in the community and learn from them and like get to know people and actually make friends and encourage their stuff. And that was all I was doing. I was sharing my stuff every once in a while, but like you said, like being a person versus being a brand. And the difference the first 6 months versus the next 6 months was astonishing. Like it was literally 10 times the number of downloads and people who were listening or wanting to participate. And it just became way more entertaining for myself, but also people wanted to participate in it. And that was a huge change in like making this more something I could do long term. So even when I had breaks, I've only taken like a month off once in a while, but I've been posting like nonstop for 3 years now. And that's what I needed to do was like find what am I comfortable talking about, but then also stepping out of that comfort zone to talk about things I'm not comfortable and bringing people who are comfortable, which at first when someone suggested like, you should talk about things like racism or like sexism in the game, I'm like, why would I want to do that? Like that was my first initial instinct was like non-confrontational. Why would I want to do that? No. That sounds terrifying. And then when I did it, it was like a really intriguing conversation and we learned a lot, even though I didn't have a ton of experience in certain things. And now I'm like, let's talk about whatever the fuck you want. Let's go. Like, bring it. Like, want to talk about anti-colonialism? Let's do it. You want to talk about ADHD? Let's do it. Like, mm-hmm. It's been all over the place.
That's the thing in a lot of those spaces. And I found that out too, being of like the most privileged demographic, you know, cishet white male, I'm going to fucking fail a lot when it comes to diversity conversations and understanding people's experiences and stuff like that. So like, I have to be willing to do that. Like, I can't shy away from being in public spaces because I'm afraid I might accidentally say the wrong thing. You know, I might accidentally say something that's racist or transphobic or ableist. Like, if I'm going to exist in these spaces, I can't be afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, because failing that way isn't the problem. The problem is what happens when you're told, hey, friend, you kind of dropped the ball on this one a little bit. You might want to course correct.
And how you know,
it's failure to course correct and respond. That's the failure you need to be afraid of. Accidentally saying something problematic is going to happen. You know, as an able-bodied cishet white male, I'm going to say some problematic shit. I'm just going to. I just have to be willing to listen to people when they say, I mean, matter of fact, that's how I met my best friend. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in chat one day on stream just talking, and I said an ableist problematic thing that everybody says all of the time and nobody thinks about it. Mm-hmm. And quiet, lurking person in the chat who has that affliction was like, can you please not use that term? Like, it's not great. And it was one of those cases where it's like, I'm just chatting and da da da, and it just came out of my mouth and la 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 la. And then I saw it in chat and I clocked it and I knew what they were talking about. And I went, got it.
Yeah.
Won't happen again. And I just moved on.
Yeah, I've had that happen because like there are certain phrases that you don't realize are problematic until like you've researched it. And some of them, like one of them was called grandfathered in. I was like, that's problematic. Why is that problematic? Because it's used so often in corporate environments. I've heard it so many times at my corporate when I worked in corporate, like you were grandfathered in because of blah, blah, blah. And I never thought about it being problematic until I like was researching another term and I saw it on the list. I'm like, huh, that's interesting. Like, I did not know that. Or like I used the term, I said they gypped me because I didn't. Like, I've never heard that was problematic. And then someone pointed out, like, hey, this is what that is coming from. That's actually kind of offensive. Like, so, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Now I know.
And that's the thing is, like, I'm not privy to that because I've never had those terms used towards me.
Correct. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not a problem that you don't know. You know, it's just like when I talk to people about identifying problematic dog whistles. Mm-hmm. And in the things that people say and the stuff that people put on the online sphere, you know, it's not a failing that you don't know what a dog whistle is. That's the point of a dog whistle. That's literally the point. Congratulations, your parents raised you well, and you don't know what these racist, sexist, misogynistic term dog whistles are. But now you do.
Yeah.
And going forward, should you fail to course correct, now you're going to receive a different kind of backlash. You know, you're going to get called out instead of called in.
I've actually seen that in action. It was interesting to watch them like basically implode. And I won't specify people, but it was like someone at one point was called out because, and they weren't called out. They were like said, hey, just so you know, this could be construed as being racist. I'm sure that wasn't your intent, but maybe in the future do XYZ instead. And instead of taking that and going with it, the person went off about how they called him racist. And it's like, no, they didn't call you racist. They said this could be misconstrued as racism. Mm-hmm. And gave you an opportunity to fix it. Mm-hmm. And they were going off in like a Discord chat. And we were all trying to calm them down because they dealt with it was a mental health thing. And they dealt with mental health. This is I deal with mental health. This is, I think we all do. And we're like, hey, just calm down. Don't do anything rash. Take a few deep breaths and then come back to the situation when you're clear-headed and realize that that's not what their intentions were when they said that. And instead, they just deleted everything. And then were confused when they came back like a month later why nobody wanted to talk with them. And I'm like, because you exploded when you were pointed out a problem and didn't listen to anybody. And then your response to us trying to help was delete everything.
Well, a lot of people have a hard time removing ego from a conversation. Mm-hmm. Someone says, what you said is a racist talking point. They hear, you're racist. Mm-hmm. And it's like trying to really, tell people and concisely and say that, like, I'm not saying you're racist. You need to remove yourself from what's going on. I'm talking about your words, not you as a person. You know, because we all say, like, we're all socially programmed with things that are problematic. They're just part of our language. They're part of our day-to-day life as we've grown up. And we don't understand the whys and the wherefores of, one, why this phrase exists. We just say it. You know, my grandmother used to say son of a biscuit eater instead of cursing. Don't know why. That's just, it's always been that way. Now, were I to say that and somebody say, hey, that's got a long history of racist connotations, you should probably not. They're not saying, hey, you're a garbage person and you deserve to have your life burned down. You know, because that's the what everybody takes it to is I'm going to have my life burned down because I said this thing. And it's like, no, we just want you to re-examine your words.
I just researched what that term meant. That is new to me.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard the phrase before. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the meaning behind the phrase. Interesting.
I have never actually Googled it. I hope it's not racist.
It's not. It says, this could be wrong because this is from Quora. But it says it's from ancient Roman times through American Revolution and Civil War era. Armies and navies would eat hardtack or sea biscuits. So sailors and soldiers were nicknamed biscuit eaters. A son of a biscuit eater is a bastard or an illegitimate child born from bad things or sex workers servicing the soldiers, which they do not use those words.
So potentially problematic.
Potentially. But it's interesting. Like, I didn't know that. Like, the more you learn. Like, phrases are interesting. Like, you just... There are so many of them and you're just like, where did that come from? And then you research it and you would never imagine where it actually came from sometimes. You're just like, how?
Those moments when you go off on a tangent like that with something you've said your whole life, you know, and like nobody's looking and you just look it up because you have a curious, because it's happened a few times with me where I'm like, why does my uncle always say that? Like, where did this come from? And you look it up and you're like, oh, wow, that's racist as fuck. Damn. Oh, okay. Delete.
Remove from vocabulary.
Yeah. Like, whew. Thank God I stepped on this mine in private.
Yeah.
But like, it's important to fail like that, though. And I think for people in the public eye, it's important to fail publicly. Like, we don't expect any of our high profile people, like content creators and stuff like that. We don't expect anybody to be perfect and anybody to get it right every day, all the time. Nobody can do that. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we watch you once, you know, you've been asked to not. How do you react to it? You know, and it's not like, you know, people conflate it and they act like, oh, I'm not allowed to say anything anymore because everything's potentially problematic. Like, no, that's not the case. Some people are going to get offended over things that are not really that problematic. And you don't have to delete every word from your dictionary, but I need you to take a hard, honest look about what somebody has said is problematic that you've said and or done and make a decision for yourself.
Yeah.
But the honestly looking at it part is very important. And if you continue to say, I don't think it's racist, you get what you get.
Like you were told.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of transphobia in the Twitter spaces and people are nicely corrected and often more times than not we see massive meltdowns from polite friendly correction, you know. Yeah. And that's the thing, is it doesn't have to be polite. If I say something transphobic and I fail on a massive level and somebody just crawls up my ass about it, mm-hmm. like I don't get to dismiss the transphobia because I didn't like the tone of their correction, you know? I don't get to tone police people who are like, yo, that's racist. People aren't required to be nice about oppression.
Yeah.
And so being sanguine with the fact that you're going to have to sit in that seat and take your talking to, and you don't get to tell them, hey, don't speak to me like that. You don't get to tell them, hey, don't take that tone with me. You know, if you want to operate, and that's the thing, is if you want to operate in the public sphere, like, these are the things you have to do. People act like we have to just throw out the English language and all of our history and start from scratch with something that's totally and completely beige and benign. No, you can live a quiet racist life, I guess, all you want. and not never have to worry about any backlash. But if you want to be in the public spaces, if you want to openly tweet something, if you want to make a podcast, if you want to do a live play, if you want to be in operate in the public sphere, you better be okay with making a mistake. Yeah, like you better be okay with making a mistake.
I know for the longest time, like I was so afraid of doing that, like so afraid of like the consequences, because I saw people get exposed and stuff like that, and I saw the backlash of it. But I also saw how they were reacting to the situation, and I was like, why are you doing it like that? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, that sounds, you're just making it worse. Like, you're digging the hole deeper, buddy. Like, stop, just calm down a little bit. And I thankfully, like, all of the situations that I run into have been over, like, conversations like this, or just, like, it was a discussion when I learned something, thankfully, or it was in a game that wasn't streamed or something where I learned something. So I thankfully have been able to not make huge mistakes, but there have been some minor mistakes that have happened on stream. Like, I found out that in one of our games, there's a character who's disabled. The player is disabled in reality in the wheelchair, so they played a character in a wheelchair. The DM and I, because it was just for the drama of it, thought it would be entertaining if my character came in and like flirted with the guy that she was interested in, because they were like not really a thing yet. And at the break, we found out that that was actually a very normal thing to happen and very upsetting for her. And like she said, this, I didn't realize how bad this would trigger me. This was upsetting because that's actually really, really normal, that what people who are disabled get put in the friend zone because the person goes to an able-bodied person instead. And that wasn't our intention at all. And she understood that, but we're like, oh my God, we're sorry. Like, we'll just drop the whole thing. Like, don't worry about it. Like, of course. And took her concerns. And in game, we never brought up the relationship again. Like, we brought up once to say, like, my character broke up with them just because they couldn't keep up with her, basically, or something like that. She was a dominatrix. But we learned something on stream in person. We're like, okay, we learned it. We got this. We won't do it again. And now we know. And the person is still our friend, still an amazing person to play with. Love playing with her. Fantastic role player. So it's just, it's really interesting to see, because like, you're like, I never thought of it that way. Happened so many times in conversation.
What's funny too, is it's like, you know, this also comes back around the original talk of voices and diversifying the voices around you. Like, if you live in an echo chamber, you're never going to get corrected unless you're in the public sphere where you're being viewed by the diversity of voices. Mm-hmm. So like, if you diversify your friend group and make sure that like you go out of your way to have a diverse friend group, you can make your oopses a little more in private and course correct there. I can't tell you how many times, you know, well, my best friend Sam has called me out on a lot of stuff, and I am forever grateful for it. You know, times that like, you know, you don't say a transphobic thing, but you repeat something you've heard in the internet spaces that's a funny joke. Well, guess what? It's a specifically trans community joke. Mm. Not my joke. You know, and in the moment of ha da 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 da, you just say the thing, da da da, move on. Okay, we're gonna go to break. Immediately, Sam's in my ear. Don't ever say that again.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't ask questions. I immediately understood that, like, oh shit, yes, that is not my joke to tell. You know, that is a joke from another community.
Yeah.
You know, a marginalized community, and it's not. I'm not punching down. I'm not being transphobic, but I'm appropriating humor born of struggle and trauma that is not mine.
Yeah. I find it interesting when like you don't know where something came from. So then when you learn, you're like just like earlier with the discussions, but like jokes and certain phrases and stuff like that. I think a common one would be the AVE, some of the vernacular that's used, and then how some of that became language that was used commonly in the LGBT space, and how they're like, you can't say those things, like that was our word, that was our thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a really interesting conversation when I first started reading about that, and it like never dawned on me that something could be specifically like one person's thing until I started to actually like need to look into it and like need to research things and need to be conscientious of what I was saying. more so, and actually be aware of, like, oh, hey, you were raised in middle white suburbia in a heteronormative family where you are the only person who's LGBT in your nearby family. So, like, there's a lot of things that you don't know or understand. And then suddenly 10 years later, you're like, oh, shit, I said some shit when I was a teenager because I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. And now I know better and would never say it. But it's like, well, I fucked up.
Well, it's like a lot of people don't understand. Culture is not a costume that you can adopt when it seems the popular thing to wear at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know, appropriation is a, you know, it's a big problem in a lot of spheres. There's a lot of it in the TTRPG sphere. You know, as people find cultures and things interesting and they want to explore them and learn about them and write about them, which is well and wonderful. Bring in people from those cultures.
Yeah.
You know, diversify the voices around you. If you want to play in those spaces and those spheres, nobody is saying don't participate, don't appreciate, don't just kill the culture, tan its hide, and use it to dress up your goofy little project. You know, that's appropriation. And people don't seem to understand or want to understand what that means. That cultures are not costumes for yourself. They're not costumes for your characters. You know, other people's generational trauma is not a fun space for you to play on the weekend. You know, especially in the public sphere, like, which is where all of this stems from. It, you know, like, people do problematic things in private all the time and we never hear about them. We hear about the stuff in the public sphere because it's in the public sphere. You put yourself out there on Front Street. You have to be prepared for any kind. You have to be prepared for the backlash as much as the praise.
I remember when recently I joined a Deadlands game that's a home game. It's just for fun. And I actually made sure I wanted to really play a Native American shaman class because I wanted to play the shaman. And I was fascinated by the culture of the Sioux Nation and all of that because it's pretty well put together in Deadlands, though Deadlands has problems of its own. So I did my own research, but I asked before I played the character, I was like, is everybody okay if I do this, knowing I'm not going to do it as a caricature? I like actually want to research this and play the character and give it justice. And everybody was okay with it. So I have actually like researched about it. And like, if it was going to be on stream, I probably wouldn't have done it. Or if I did it, I would have, actually, no, I don't think I would have done it, period. But hypothetically, if I would have, I would have reached out to someone to like get further knowledge on how to do it. Or had someone who is native play the character. But I wanted to play the character to actually like play that class, but it was specifically a Native American shaman. You had to be the Native American to be the shaman in the Deadlands game. And it's been really interesting researching the Sioux Nation, and it is helping me a little bit because my adoptive daughter is part Native American. So I'm learning about her culture at the same time as playing the character. And that's helping me also like learn more about what her birth mother would have experienced and what she could experience if she goes into that type of thing. So I did it for those two reasons, but it's fascinating what you can learn. And like, then when you actually research, like, because Deadlands does state that like racism isn't acceptable, but they also state like historically, this is what would have been. It's okay if you remove this, you are allowed to be comfortable at your table. But I also researched like what would have happened to the original people versus colonizers in the Wild West era. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot. There's a shit ton. And it's like, huh, I'm learning more now than I did in history class.
See, and that's the thing I always try to ask people is when they want to play a marginalized character is why? You know, oh, it's a game of make-believe. I can't pretend that I'm Black, that I'm Indigenous. Why do you want to, though? Is it so that you can lean into tropes, racist tropes? Right. Are you doing it because you want to use AAVE or use some type of gross accent, you know, some stereotypical accent? Why do you want to play this character because, you know, like you said, mechanically, that was the class you wanted to play and it was tied to this.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you handle it responsibly? You know, and then in the midst of an oops, I fucked up, if you do it in the public sphere, how do you handle the pushback? How do you handle being called out? How do you handle being called in?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, if you want to do this stuff, nobody's stopping anybody from starting an all white cast, an all white male cast of a TTRPG where all of their characters are black women. Nobody's stopping them. But why do you want to do it?
Right.
What is your impetus? Do you want to get up there and just throw horrific, stereotypical, harmful tropes and stereotypes out there? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to do this? You know, and I try to get people to really sit and examine why.
Yeah, I think it's the whys are interesting. And then I think I do know people who would play it just to be a stereotype. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable with you doing that. Mm-hmm. And I've straight up told them that. Or like, I played at games where people have made racist comments and I've said something and have been called the white knight. And I'm like, look, I don't care right now. Like, I don't care if there's nobody that's a person of color at our table right this second. And this is a home game. I get that. But that doesn't make me comfortable when you say mm-hmm. that.
And see, and in my opinion, that's what it matters most. You know, calling people out publicly, fine, that's great. But how do you act when there's nobody from that group around? It's all people of your own demographic, and somebody makes a homophobic comment, a transphobic comment, a racist comment, sexist comment. How do you act in that moment? Do you tell your best friend? Yeah, that's not fucking cool. Why did you say that? You know, do you walk away from a gaming group because, like, look, this is too racist, this is too misogynistic, I can't play, this is a very sexist table, I can't be here. Like, that's what it matters most.
Yeah, racism I learned a lot from the tabletop community. Trans and LGBT stuff I've learned a lot when I zapped my kid because they were trans. They are not anymore. But I learned a lot about certain things very quickly because I wanted to be a safe space for this child. And when we adopted her originally, we knew that it felt like it was a perfect fit. One, because we were both weird as fuck, which was fine. But two, because so many people in the adoption foster care system, because we adopted through the foster care in Florida, were religious. And so many of them were asked, like, oh, what do you want to bring to this child's life? And they're like, we want to bring God to their life. And we're like, no. My husband and I are both agnostic or atheists. And like, we're like, eh. And somebody actually asked, like, what if you're not religious? What if you're not religious and that you have a religious child? It's like, you take them to church then. You like, let them go to church if they want to go to church. Or don't make them go to church if they don't want to go to church. If they're not hurting anybody, who gives a shit what they do? Mm-hmm. But when we were talking to this kid who is now ours, but like they were saying that they were LGBT, they're possibly trans, they were pagan or Wiccan and like all these other things. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like I'm LGBT. I'm not out yet at the time. I don't worship any God. Like I don't care. Like you can be whoever you want to be. You are whoever you are. And I had to learn the hard way how difficult it would be to get my rest of the family to be on that same page. And I didn't click sometimes because I'm so used to being non-confrontational. I've had to become confrontational as a mother that I didn't realize I would ever need to be because I hate fucking confrontation. But I have straight up started yelling at people now and said things and like called out my parents or called out my grandparents or like called out the fucking barber who went on a tangent about women's haircut versus men's haircuts. And I'm just like, I've literally said he four times in the last 5 seconds. Please respect that. What are you doing? Like, we can leave. Like, I don't fucking care. And it was also interesting to learn firsthand how viewpoints of your past can affect how you hear things and how you see things. So, like, a perfect example is there was a dad playing with his little girl outside and the little girl screeched out of joy. So I heard, because I was raised in a fairly healthy home, despite some traumas, a father playing with his daughter. That's not what my kid heard. My kid heard a child scared and screaming to get away from their father. Mm-hmm. So they started going into a panic attack. And I was so confused. I was like, why are you upset? Like, why? What is happening? And we talked about it. And I was like, I looked out the window and I was like, it's just a dad playing with his kids. She's like, that's not what I hear. And we talked about it a little bit. And I realized, oh, Like, it finally dawned on me after like 6 months of them living with me why sometimes they got upset, and I didn't understand or comprehend why. And it was because they have different life experiences than I do, and I will never fully understand everything that they experience, and that's okay, as long as I understand and try to help them, or try to at least learn from what I've, if I did something wrong, to fix it up. Because I'm not going to be a perfect parent. Nobody is, but I can try.
Make a place where they feel safe that they can articulate their experience.
Yeah.
You know, where they can be like, this upsets me, or this makes me happy, or this triggers a response of some kind because this. Like, if you can make a space where somebody feels comfortable enough to say, I am positively or negatively triggered about this specific thing in this way, like, you're doing a good job building a comfortable space for people.
Yeah. And that was important. And then I had to get to the other side where I had to feel comfortable saying, hey, when you do this, it triggers me or it upsets me. And that was a big one because they have a very dark sense of humor. Sometimes that doesn't click well with my personal boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I've had to set up boundaries before so that we can make sure to continue to have a healthy relationship. And thankfully, like, as long as I have it in the right context and say it in a calm manner when things aren't escalated, like, they have taken it well. And they've been like, okay, that makes sense. I understand. And sometimes we still have blowups because whatever reasons, because kids, 20-year-olds still developing. But it's still a learning curve with, hey, this is a new boundary that I need to put into place so I can continue to be a good parent and I continue to support you in the way that I want to. But if we keep going down this path, ultimately it's leading to me having more bad days, which means I can't be on the top of my game because I'm locking all that inside to deal with what you're dealing with. But on that note, is there anything else you think people should know before we sign off?
No. That was a good talk.
Awesome. Well, check out all the links in the description down below, and everything that you said, where you said you could be found, will be there. Is there anything you want to add to the links? Anything cool you're going to be working on?
It's pretty much just business as usual for me. I just randomly make art stuff and put it in my shop.
Go check out the shop. Go buy some things. And this week, because it's the 28th when this episode goes live, I'm pretty sure we're both going to be at PAX U.
Mm-hmm.
So come find us at PAX U and say hello.
Yes, I will be giving out etched health potion tokens to anybody wearing their mask. So I don't know if you can see on the video. It's hard to see. It's a little potion bottle. It says 2d4 plus 2.
Love it. It's adorable. Yeah, so come go find the table and get the things, get the tokens. And then come see. I'll be walking around randomly. I'll also be running 3 games. So go find me running games. If you want to play a necrobiotic, a dystopian future world where the dead are used to being constructs, come find the 3 games that I'm running of that, because I helped proofread the game and I am on the book name. I have a name in the book and I was very happy.
So, nice.
But you can find me at Beholder to No One on Twitter. And this week, tomorrow I'm going to be in Big Gay Dice Game on 2000 Tales Roleplaying on YouTube at 8:30. And then I'll be at PAX Unplugged for this weekend. I probably will not be releasing any episodes up until the 12th because I'm going on vacation after PAX Unplugged, so I don't want to edit anything. But yeah, well, keeping awesome. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the Table Party.
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 Welcome to the Table Party.